Hello, so here we are in module number 9. We are talking about international strategy. I actually think the book does a really good job on international strategy. So looking forward to you looking at these other resources that we have provided and going through and doing some of those readings. But certainly the book does a good job of breaking this down. So we will discuss it as well. One of the things that I just want to get off discuss right off the bat is the fact that international strategy, even if you're a domestic company, international strategy is going to affect you. So remember, very, very few businesses are not touched by an international business somewhere in the supply chain. So as we talk about that value chain, as we talk about that supply chain, remember that there are tons of businesses that touch that. And what I mean by that is you have businesses say you're a coffee shop or a chocolate shop, even better. And you are a chocolate shop that operates in, let's go to a town I was in recently, Silva, North Carolina. So you have a local chocolate shop where you make your own chocolate in Silva, North Carolina. Now, one may say, well, there is no way in the western Appalachian Mountains in Silva, North Carolina, that that can be an international business. But it can be. Remember, you can ship your goods overseas. Certainly, if you have a website where you sell your goods, somebody can buy them. Or you also have things like, where do you get your chocolate from? Where does that come from? Does that come from America? Is that grown in America? Or does it come from overseas? It comes from somewhere else. When you box your product up and you ship it, where does it go? It could go internationally. One of my favorite things was a local sub shop in Florida. It's still around. It's called Russo's Subs. Let me see if I can bring it up. So Russo's, I used to go in there as a kid, and one of the things that Russo's did, oh, they got rid of the picture, is Russo's, they would have a board where they talked about all the places that that they would ship to, and they had, it was around the world, and you could, they would put their little submarine sandwiches on dry ice, and they would ship them everywhere. So their website is not showing that anymore. And it's pretty slow, so we're gonna go ahead and we're gonna abandon that. But they would ship their subs everywhere. So even a little submarine shop in West Palm Beach, Florida, was an international company and shipped their product everywhere. So there you go. So you know, anything can be international, whether it's supplies coming in or get there. Get their products internationally. So let us talk about the advantages and the disadvantages of competing in an international market. Obviously, if you're going to compete in an international market, that's going to be a larger customer base. Certainly, the more people will be able to purchase your product if you're competing internationally. Easy way to think about that is if you are, well, let's take that submarine shop. So Russo's has been in business for 73 years, according to their website. I don't know if it's still 73 or might be 75 at this point. But they've been in business for almost 75 years. So Russo's, by shipping their product nationally and internationally, which they've done, they are able to serve more customers. So somebody in Ohio or in Michigan, where I'm at right now, can enjoy one of their subs. You could call up Russo's and say, hey, put it on dry ice, get a FedEx overnight to me, and I could be enjoying one of their submarine sandwiches with oil and red pepper tomorrow morning. Russo's is an example of having that expanded customer base. And when you can expand your customer base, there's more people buying your product, then you're able to sell more, which generates more revenue and all those things. Now, there is disadvantages for going with that strategy, and that is, let's take our little sub shop, Russo's. Disadvantages, that adds a lot of complexity, right? So now not only do they have to worry about getting product in, but instead of people just coming to them, now they have to worry about shipping product out. So they have to, they probably have FedEx come to them, but let's, for this example, we'll pretend they didn't. So they're going to have to make those submarine sandwiches. They're going to have to buy a cooler with dry ice to pack them in. Then they're going to have to go to the shipping store. They're going to have to select next day shipping. They're going to have to hope that there's not shipping delays, which would ruin their product, because then they would have to work that out with the customer. Then they're going to have to ship their product to wherever their product is going. Then the customer is going to open it up, be home to receive that product, and then enjoy that product, whatever. You can see that it adds quite a bit of complexity to the process. So that's one of the things about operating internationally. When you're thinking about operating internationally, your strategy is to go international, you have to consider all of the complexity that is added. There's legal requirements. Different countries operate under different laws. There's political considerations. Companies like stability. And when you are operating overseas or in a place that's different from your own, and you're further away from what's going on, you may not understand all the political nuances, cultural nuances, socio-cultural nuances. You might understand and not understand currency and the different currency rates and the effects on currency when you're doing those kind of things. So all these things are considerations when you're operating internationally and when you're creating an international strategy. Also think about supplies. Supplies are a big thing as well. And sometimes shipping your products overseas or even getting supplies overseas if you're operating overseas is a difficult thing. But, you know, there are other advantages. Let's certainly not talk about all the bad things besides opening yourself up to new customers. We talked about that term diversification yesterday. In the last module, so diversification is another element, and then lower cost, because if you can reduce your lower labor costs or you can reduce some of your other costs, then you're going to be in better shape financially. So those are reasons that you would want to do it. Think about offshoring offshoring is a way to go overseas and to offer your products offer elements of your business overseas. So you certainly see that a lot with call centers and things like that, which are operated out of India and other countries. Before you go overseas, you're going to want to do something called a PESTLE. You see it spelled different ways, PESTLE or PESTEL. As I said, I think the book does a good job on this, so I'm going to show the visual that's in the book. You want to analyze, when you're trying to decide to go overseas, you want to analyze the political environment. You want to see what's going on economically, what the socio-cultural tendencies are, some of the technological considerations as well, ecological, and then finally the legal implications. And you can see if it would be a positive move for your company to move overseas, or whether you should not take on that international strategy. So certainly, PESTLE is a good thing to do it. Remember, when you go overseas, there are certain levels of risk. So you got to consider those. As I said, the book goes through this well. I don't want to rehash the book or restate what's in the book, but I do like this chart, which are the examples of cultural risk. You do not want to snap your fingers if you're asking for your check. Certainly, provocative dress in certain countries is not wanted. The one that would bother me is punctuality. I like to be on time or early to places, and certainly that is a different cultural expectation in other places. So the key is, if you're going to operate in another country, or if you're part of a business, or you're a leader, or whatever, you got to have a measure of cultural adaptability. There's this man named Hofstede, and Hofstede came out with these cultural dimensions. Individuality versus collectivism, masculinity versus femininity, power distance, and all these other terms that I would encourage you to look at. These cultural dimensions are part of understanding the culture of a country. There's this thing that did a globe study, which rated them for all the countries in the world. So that is meaningful and good research and data to understand the cultural nuances about with operating in a different country. So remember that there is also cultural differences with language. Certainly terms that we use here in the United States or terms that are used in England to represent certain things, like they have a different word for cigarette, for instance, and that word could be considered offensive in the United States. Certainly things like that need to be considered as well. In addition to international, when thinking about international strategy, there are things which is how far a business should go from their target market. This is called CAGE. CAGE dimensions are made up of four things, and like you would think, CAGE, cultural, administrative, geographic, and economic. So cultural distance, that's the distance between a target and a home country. So that's the similarity between the cultures. For example, your cultural distance between Australia and the United States would certainly be less, even though they're quite far apart, than the cultural distance between the United States and Venezuela, which is geographically closer. Remember that because of colonialization and because of these other things, certainly there's less cultural distance between certain places than other places. So that's one thing you have to be concerned with. And if you notice, most of these things, cultural dimensions, we're going to talk about administrative, which is legal and political. These are all part of the PESTEL as well, that we just talked about. PESTEL, remember I said there's two different spellings of it. You'll see it both ways. The legal and political systems and the target country. Using Australia as an example, they have a fairly close administrative distance with their framework and their structure as the United States. One of the things to keep in mind with this is labor laws. In Sweden, for example, they have a lot. They give a lot of time off for working families. And if you were a company that was going to operate in Sweden, you would have to be aware of what those laws were and make sure that you are following them. Geographic distance, I mean, that's pretty obvious. Obviously, if you are trying to do business in Australia from the eastern part of the United States, that's pretty far. That distance is going to add cost to your shipping and everything else. So that's going to have to be figured into the cost of products and your determination of whether you want to go overseas or not. And then finally, economic distance. That would be the distance between two countries as far as economic factors. So things that are looked at as GNI or GDP is what most people are familiar with, which is gross domestic product. If you're a U.S.-based company and you are going to operate in a company that has a similar GDP, that has a similar standard of living, obviously your product is going to find more success and you're going to have to modify your product less than if it was a country that had a much lower standard of living. So depending on what your product is, it may not be advantageous to start a business there. For instance, Tiffany jewelry is very expensive. Going to a country that's average salary is $2.50 a month for the average worker may not make sense, as opposed to going to a country with a much higher standard of living. So that is CAGE. So you have international strategy, you have a global strategy, you have transnational strategy, you have a multi-domestic strategy. So all these terms are a little bit of confusing, but I think this chart, and we'll talk about what each of these do, but I think this chart kind of gives a kind of a good framework for us to begin the conversation, and that is, you know, if you have high cost pressure, but low responsiveness, a global strategy would make sense versus a multi-domestic would be if you have low cost or high cost pressure. Low cost pressure, but high responsiveness pressure. So we'll talk about what that means, but you know, as you're reading through this, go back to that figure quite a bit. I think it will help you. So a multi-domestic strategy, you're not worried about cost or efficiency, but you want to work on the local requirements for each market. So instead of Netflix, instead of just doing American-based shows, they offer different programming based on what country they are in. A global strategy is you're not really worried about the local market, so the cultural requirements and things like that, because you're more worried about cost and efficiency. You are worried about making, you make some minor modifications to your product, but generally you're not going to be worried too much because you're worried that you are focusing on lower cost, lower strategy. So there's examples of that. The book talks about Intel as one that has that strategy. A transnational strategy is kind of the middle ground. So McDonald's does that and KFC, where they certainly keep a lot of their business model, but certainly have some regional favorites based on where you go. There's a movie that talks about McDonald's having a Royale with cheese in a different location. But taking movie examples out of it, if you go to McDonald's overseas, you will see different offerings based on the local taste, like being able to get wine at the McDonald's in France. So Porter, we've heard of that man. Porter has what's called a diamond model for national advantage, and this is what it looks like. So you want to look at the strategy, the structure, the rivalry, the factor conditions, the demand conditions, and then what are the support industries. So you need to look at the home country's demand conditions, the home country, their home country's factor conditions, and then what are the support industries within that. And you may find that there is not a lot of demand for a product, Or there's a smaller demand for a product. For instance, in America, we tend to want to go bigger and better, but that's not always the demand strategy for other countries, which may favor smaller meals or favor smaller products or maybe less waste and things like that. You know, I will tell you, you know, certainly European roads, some European roads, you don't want my vehicle on European roads because I would take up the entire two lanes in my vehicle, for example. By the way, I don't prefer big, large vehicles. I just happen to have one for a reason. There's also factor conditions. You know, think about how India is the seventh largest country in terms of land mass, but its population size is second. It has more English speakers than the United States. So India has there's a factor condition there which makes them very attractive for businesses that speak English. And then think about support industry. So if you're a restaurant like McDonald's or whatever, going to a country that has a larger agricultural presence obviously would be advantageous to you and would help you with your business. And then keep in mind you have to know what rivalry is there, what your competitors are doing, and things like that. There are different options for going internationally, and again, I think the book does a good job of explaining these. So I just want to bring up this chart. That's exporting. Many of you are familiar with exporting. That's making that Russo sub in West Palm Beach, Florida, and then shipping it to wherever around the world that somebody wants to eat a Russo sub. I would argue everybody in the world should eat a Russo sub. Licensing is granting a foreign company the right to use your product. Coca-Cola does this a lot. In fact, what's interesting is one of my favorite, when I used to drink soda, one of my favorite sodas was in the Middle East. You could get it, but you couldn't get it anywhere else in America or anywhere else. And it was a, I forget what it was called. It wasn't Coke Zero. It was something else. It was like Coke None or something. Anyway, it was this product that Coca-Cola does. They licensed it out. They used their secret formula, and you could only get it in the Middle East, and it was delicious, and I drank tons of them, and I couldn't find them, and I gave up soda, so I don't even drink them anymore. Franchising is giving the name over to somebody else. Joint venture is, we've talked about that a lot, is working with another company. You can just buy a company, and that's one way to do it as well. You know, when you're looking at your international strategy, you got to see what strategy makes the most sense. Do you want to keep your entire brand, or do you want to do other things? And then what kind of controls are going to be? Certainly, when you're franchising something, you need to make sure that your brand and the elements of your brand are kept. Obviously, if you go international with that, the further away you go, the harder it is to monitor to make sure that the requirements that you have around your brand are being met. Okay. So what that boils down to is investment and risk. I just kind of talked about this. And you can see here that exporting, licensing, and franchising, it really is pretty low risk. But obviously, the profit potential and then the ownership and things like that is not really controlled as tightly as if you do a wholly owned subsidiary. So I just wanted to mention that. I think that is the main things I wanted to cover. It is. So next one, we will talk about executing strategy through organizational design. So we will talk about the basics of organizational structure, whether it's a flat organization, a matrix organization, there's all kinds. But we will be discussing that next, and I look forward to sharing some thoughts on organizational design with you as we continue our discussion of strategy. Thank you so much.